lift from the river as the golden flood poured over the land. You got that warm, contented feeling of another job well done, even if you didn't actually know how you'd done it. He got up, shuffled on his slippers, and padded out of his bedroom and down the wide corridor that led to the huge spiral stairs and the roof. A few rushlights illuminated the statues of the other local gods, painting the walls with shifting shadow pictures of things dog-headed, fish-bodied, spider-armed. He'd known them since childhood. His juvenile nightmares would have been quite formless without them. The sea. He'd only seen it once when he was a boy. He couldn't recall a lot about it except the size and the noise and the seagulls. They'd preyed on his mind. They seemed to have it far better worked out, seagulls. He wished he could come back as one. One day. But of course that wasn't an option if you were a pharaoh. You never came back. You didn't exactly go away, in fact.
"Well, what is it?" said Tepic. "Try it," said Chidda. "Just try it. You'll never have the chance again."
"Seems a shame to spoil it," said Arthur gallantly, looking down at the delicate pattern on his plate. "What are all the little red things?"
"Oh, they're just radishes," said Chidda dismissively. "They're not the important part. Go on."
Tepic reached over with the little wooden fork and skewered a paper-thin sliver of white fish. The squishy chef was scrutinising him with the air of one watching a toddler on his first birthday. So, he realised, was the rest of the restaurant. He chewed it carefully. It was salty and faintly rubbery, with a hint of sewage outfall.
"Nice," said Chidda anxiously.
Several nearby diners started to clap.
"Different," Tepic conceded, chewing. "What is it?" "Deep sea blowfish," said Chidda. "It's all right," he said hastily, as Tepic laid down his fork meaningfully. "It's perfectly safe, provided every bit of stomach, liver and digestive tract is removed. That's why it costs so much. There's no such thing as a second-best blowfish, chef. It's the most expensive food in the world. People write poems about it."
"Could be a taste explosion," muttered Tepic, getting a grip on himself. Still, it must have been done properly, otherwise the place would now be wearing him as wallpaper. He poked carefully at the sliced roots which occupied the rest of the plate.
"What do these do to you?" he said. "Well, unless they're prepared in exactly the right way, over a 6-week period, they react catastrophically with your stomach acids," said Chidda. "Sorry, I thought we should celebrate with the most expensive meal we could afford."
"I see. Fish and chips for men," said Tepic.
"Do they have any vinegar in this place?" said Arthur, his mouth full, "and some mushy peas would go down a treat."
But the wine was good. Not incredibly good, though. Not one of the great vintages, but it did explain why Tepic had gone through the whole of the day with a headache. It had been the hang-under. His friend had bought 4 bottles of otherwise quite ordinary white wine. The reason it was so expensive was that the grapes it was made from hadn't actually been planted yet. Counterwise wine is made from grapes belonging to that class of flora, re-annuals, that grow only in excessively high magic fields. Normal plants grow after the seeds have been planted. With re-annuals, it's the other way round. Although re-annual wine causes inebriation in the normal way, the action of the digestive system on its molecules causes an unusual reaction whose net effect is to thrust backwards in time to a point some hours before the wine is drunk. Hence the saying, have a hair of the dog that's going to bite you. Light moves slowly, lazily, on the disc. It's in no hurry to get anywhere. Why bother? At light speed, everywhere is the same place. King Tepikaimon the 27th watched the golden disc float over the edge of the world. A flight of cranes took off from the mist-covered river. He'd been conscientious, he told himself. No one had ever explained to him how one made the sun come up and the river flood and the corn grow. How could they? He was the god, after all. He should know. But he didn't. So he'd just gone through life, hoping like hell that it would all work properly. And that seemed to have done the trick. The trouble was, though, that if it didn't work, he wouldn't know why not. A recurrent nightmare was of Dios, the high priest, shaking him awake one morning, only it wouldn't be a morning, of course, and of every light in the palace burning, and an angry crowd muttering in the starlit darkness outside, and everyone looking expectantly at him. And all he'd be able to say was, sorry. It terrified him.
How easy to imagine the ice forming on the river, the eternal frost rhyming the palm trees.